the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, after a bumper match day one to kick off the new season, as always, we proudly unveil Overreaction Theatre. Sean and Belmare are going to win the league.
Oh, absolutely. The way they play, they're absolutely magnificent. What a performance and a real marker set down for the rest of the table.
Yeah, I reckon so. With, of course, our annual nod to the ESPN Fantasy Focus football podcast, the Overreaction Theatre, where we've only got 90 minutes, or in some cases about 100 minutes of evidence to go on. So, yes, let's jump to sweeping conclusions and decide this team's great, this team's rubbish, etc., etc. And, Sam, we probably won't have too many other occasions this season, or maybe we will. We don't know. But to give Seanan top billing, and yes, it's a shock to everyone. It's probably a shock to the Seanan players as well that they went down to Tosu on Saturday afternoon. An inclement Saturday afternoon down there. Quite a lot of rain about, but Seanan didn't bother a jot about that. They absolutely crushed Tosu. 5-1, although, as we're going to come on to, and I might as well just play the VAR drop now.
This week in VAR.
This week in VAR. This week.
If VAR had gotten up on the other side of bed on Saturday morning, it might have been 3-3 at halftime.
It may well have been, yeah. Sean certainly had the benefit of the doubt with their VAR decisions. They all went their way, and in some cases correctly, in some cases absolutely not correctly, but yeah, they won't care if they've got VAR on their side all season. Why not go on an amazing run towards the title?
And all of the headlines for Seanan last season, of course, were centered around Shuto Machino, the runner-up in the race for the Golden Boot. I'm not sure how many people had him in their J-League fantasy teams to start the season, but certainly if we were expecting goals from Seanan, we were expecting them to come via Machino. But on Saturday, he was happy to play the role of provider for strike partner Yuki Ohashi, who scored a sensational hat-trick beginning in just the third minute.
This is just an absolutely incredible performance from him. Through all the previews that we've done, everyone else has done, I don't think anyone's mentioned Yuki Ohashi's name. And for him to come in and be the star performer of the opening weekend is just kind of what the J-League's about. I think he took his chances really well. The link-up play with Machino was very good. They had a good understanding. And fantastic for him. Absolutely unbelievable. So, yeah, really good from them. I thought Seanan generally played very well. I know we'll get into the VAR stuff and how that affected the game, but they took their chances nicely. They countered really quickly. There was great movement between the attacking players. It just seemed like a more fresh and open Seanan Belmare than maybe we've previously seen. I remember maybe 2 or 3 years ago, these two teams played each other. They were the only game on a Sunday at 5 a.m. here, and I was seriously considering quitting my job. And for them to have gone from that to this sort of game, I thought, yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So Ohashi began as he meant to carry on in just the third minute when he slid in to convert a cross from Daiki Sugioka. Then the first VAR incident of the afternoon that affected a goal anyway, was in the 13th minute when Sol Kawahara's 20-yard free kick for Tosu came back off the post with Yoichi Naganuma controlling the loose ball on his chest, then blasting home, only for the goal to be disallowed after a VAR check with Yuto Iwasaki running across Son Bum-kyun in his Belmare debut, of course, the South Korean international keeper. What did you think, Sam? It was, technically it's the right decision, although, Song is never saving Naganuma's shot, is he? It's hit with such venom from such close range.
Yeah, I know we talked up Song on the preview episode, but there's no way he's good enough to save the effort from Naganuma here. It's just smashed past him. There's no chance, whether Iwasaki is there or not. I know that technically he's next to him in an offside position, but I don't think the play is interfered with. I think the outcome is the exact same, whether Iwasaki is there or not. So I think this is a really harsh call, but I guess once they analyse it, they slow it down, he's there, they have to give the decision, but it's not one that I like at all.
Yeah, all right. And yes, not for the last time on this afternoon, VAR was to be a thorn in Tosu's side. The next occasion was in the 36th minute when Belmari countered and a long ball sent Shuto Machino clear. He looked for all the world about 3 yards offside, but still the play carried on, obviously play to the whistle. He squared for Ohashi to tap in his second with the linesman flagging Machino offside, as pretty much everybody in the stadium and watching on TV expected he would be. But then a VAR check showed that he was somehow on by a hair, and Tosu were undone by VAR again. So was this the correct decision ultimately, Sam?
Yes, he's only just onside, but he is onside. And this is the reason why linesmen are told to keep their flag down, allow play to go out. I know people get angry about it. They get annoyed by, why is he flagging late? Eventually, after if Machino had completely messed his pass up, then he'd have flagged, and then people would have been very unhappy. But this is why you allow play to continue. He is just about onside, assuming that they've got their lines right, which I'm not sure they always were in other games this week. But yeah, it was given as onside. I think that's the correct decision. But yeah, a really tight one, and one that just went the wrong way for Tosu again.
Yes, indeed. So that was a 2-0 in the 36th minute. But wait, there's more. In the first minute of stoppage time, Kawahara sent in another free kick for Tosu. A volley at the back stick came back off the post, and Akito Fukuta fired in off Song, only for VAR to intervene again offside. So I presume, Sam, it was the player who volleyed Kawahara's free kick. Do you know who that was? I wasn't able to catch it from the highlights. But again, who was it, and was that the right decision too?
Yeah, it was Yamazaki who pulled away at the back post, and it was his volley. And he was offside. They did show a replay afterwards, and he is offside. So again, unfortunate for Tosu, but the correct decision.
Rightio then. Okay. And there was still time for two more legitimate goals before half time. Taiyo Hiraoka completely free in the center to control Kosuke Onose's lofted pass and finish past Park Il-gyu to make it 3-0. That was in the fifth minute of stoppage time, with Tosu scoring, well, for the third time themselves in the half, but for the first time that it was actually allowed to stand, as Yuji Ono had time to pick his spot past Song after taking a cutback from Iwasaki in the ninth minute of stoppage time. So, well, I'm sure you had to hose yourself down at half time, Sam. It was an absolutely breathless first half, and I mean, it threatened to go on for nearly an hour.
It did. I mean, it was every time, because there were multiple games happening while this first game was on, and every time I was looking at this game, it seemed to be under VAR review. So I was amazed it finished when it did, and it didn't take too long in added time, I suppose, in the end. I mean, this goal was like the ninth minute of added time, and yeah, it was just crazy. Everything was happening, it was all action. And at this point, yeah, Shonan ran 3-0 up. It wasn't like they were battering them and they were the better team and quite clearly ahead. But so at this point, when Tosu got a goal back, I thought we're set up for a really good second half here, because Tosu were going to really go for it. And Shonan, who were not always the greatest side going forward or defensively, I thought we could have had a really good second half. But yeah, you've got to give a lot of credit to the way Shonan approached that second half. I thought they were absolutely magnificent and yeah, deserve all the plaudits that we're going to give them in this episode.
Yeah, terrific. You were looking for a reaction from Tosu in the second half, and then Machino almost scored 8 seconds after the restart. But Park was able to parry his shot away at close range. And Sam, I was in the unusual position of sitting in the grandstand at Shonan's Lemon Gas Stadium while they were putting Tosu to the sword down in Kyushu. My kids, their athletics group had a run around not actually on the pitch, unfortunately, although I did make it down there and gave it a good rub to see it's in a good condition for Friday's home opener against Yokohama FC. But yes, I was sitting in the main stand periodically checking the score from down in Tosu, and I mean, my wife wasn't particularly impressed at the fact that Shonan were winning 5-1, but yes, I did mention, I had to tell somebody, so I mentioned a couple of times that Ohashi had finished off his hat trick in the 60th minute, again set up by Machino, and then the pick of the goals, I guess, Sam, and well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, it's the clubhouse leader for goal of the season. And no, listeners, it's never too early to have a clubhouse leader for that. Onose leaping to volley home Ryota Nagaki's driven corner, and that was just 4 minutes after Ohashi had made it 4-1. And obviously, yourself as a Manchester United fan, I'm sure that just brought flashbacks ringing back for you.
Yes, good and bad, really, in terms of those sorts of goals. And we've had the one David Beckham to Paul's goals, that's the one everyone remembers, against Bradford, fantastic volley. They also had the one against Bayern Munich where Ribéry put the corner in and Robben put in the volley, and for weeks afterwards we were just trying to recreate that on the park. So hopefully, I don't know if kids go and play football out on the field anymore, but hopefully some Shonan supporters are trying to recreate the Onose volley here, because it was fantastic, a perfectly placed corner, wonderful technique on the volley into the corner. It was just glorious. It's without question clubhouse lead, and it's a shame you went to the wrong ground. I know you were trying to go to this game, but obviously forgot that it was down in Dosen.
Yes, I missed the memo, but still lovely to be in there and have a walk around. It's very nice, and the boys were doing their business down in Kyushu. It was definitely something. And have they thrown down a marker here, Sam, or have they what have they done? We're here to overreact to match day one. People's attention were on Friday night. It was on Tokyo Urawa on Saturday in the 2 o'clock games. Not too many people would have been pegging this game as the one that would lead J-Tuk after match day one. But what does this mean for Shonan going forward? How much do you want to react, I suppose, to one result?
Well, it's got to give them an immense amount of confidence, because Tosu, I know that they've always get routed with players, but they're usually a very good team. They don't usually get battered. And for Shonan to have gone down there and to win in the manner that they have, in a way that generally they've never done before in J1, except unless they're playing Kawasaki in that ridiculous game. But generally speaking, we're not sat here thinking, they're speaking about a massive away win for Shonan Bellmare. So, yeah, it's going to give them so much confidence. It's not going to be a marker for the title. It'd be great if it was, but it's definitely a marker laid down to all those that are fearing a relegation battle and thinking, okay, but maybe we can drag Shonan in. Maybe that's a team we can finish above. And for them to have put out 5 in the first game, I think is magnificent for them. They then have the next game is Yokohama FC at home, which you expect to win if you're Shonan. Even before this result, you expect to beat Yokohama FC at home. So suddenly they're on 6 points already after 2 games, let's say. And it's a perfect start for them. And it kind of, especially with one relegation place, it kind of allays a lot of those fears and it allows them to play with more freedom throughout the season. And then maybe with that freedom and confidence, they can run to the top half of the table or even higher, who knows? So, yeah, it's just a perfect way to start. And, yeah, they should be all up and at them for training this week. It should be a fantastic place to be, the Shonan training ground.
Yeah, absolutely. A great way to start the season. It goes without saying. And they've surprised so many people in match day one. It'll be interesting to see how they back up on a Friday night football at home against Yokohama FC. I can confirm, yes, that the pitch is in excellent condition for that game. So, the players will have no excuses whatsoever. So, there you go, Shonan supporters. You're top billing on J-Talk after match day one. And if you keep up performances like that, that might be, I'm sure it will be come a regular occurrence. All right, that was a bit of a surprise to lead off the episode. But obviously the main event for many people in match day one was the clash of last season's top two. We'll talk about that with Stuart Woodward after the break. Obviously, on paper, the showpiece game of the match day one slate was the clash of last season's top two at Todoroki on Friday night. It obviously was the kickoff event that started the new J1 season, and it was the defending champions who emerged victorious. Yokohama F. Marinos defeating their Kanagawa rivals Kawasaki Frontale 2-1 away from home, and there to watch it for us was our F. Marinos correspondent Stuart Woodward, who is back and I'm sure in a terrific mood after Friday night's event. So, Stuart, welcome back to the pod. And, yes, how are you?
Oh, very good. Thank you. Yes, very good start to the season.
Absolutely. So, Friday night, a packed house at Todoroki, of course. And, a huge game to start the season. I mean, Sam said last week there's probably these two teams didn't really fancy playing each other in match day one, Stuart. But, I mean, the fact that you've done it now and you've played on paper your hardest game of the season away at the team that finished second to you last year, and you've emerged with the 3 points, I guess, by hook or by crook, it's mission accomplished. And you move on to the next one, hopefully slightly easier games from this point forward.
Yes, I've been to Todoroki many times, and it's a long walk back from the station there if you don't pull it off. But this time, just after, was it almost 4 minutes, first goal went in, and that really boosted the confidence that, okay, this is looking doable. This is looking doable tonight. But yeah, it was a difficult match to have at the very start of the season. And but I think maybe the timing was actually very good for us, because with some of Kawasaki's players like Leandro out, then that's great for us. Or, we'll take that, and we'll definitely, take the 2-1 score that we got.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Sam, Neil mentioned on last week's one of last week's episodes that Toru Uniki might be experimenting a bit and changing his tactics. But I guess it all blew up in his face in just the fourth minute, as Stuart mentioned, when Jun Sung Ryong's attempted clearance was undercooked, and Elber was able to head across to Takuma Nishimura to volley in the opener. So Kawasaki's best laid plans were swept aside in just the fourth minute of the first game of the new season.
Yeah, there's not much you can tactically do about your goalkeeper booting the ball to their opposition winger. It's a dreadful clearing from him. Jung was trying to play out from the back a little bit more than maybe he's used to. And this was a really poor clearance. And there were signs before the game, actually, that maybe Kami Fukumoto was going to come in because he was better at this sort of thing. So if Kawasaki are trying to play out from the back a little bit more, then maybe Kami Fukumoto might be the one that comes in. And this is going to do nothing for Jung's confidence or his clinch on that number one jersey. It was a really poor clearance out. And then even when it went to Nishimura, Jung had got back into position and then was very slow to try and react to the shot. I think a better goalkeeper may have had a fist at saving Nishimura's effort. So really this was a terrible start for him, a terrible start for Kawasaki, because you don't want to be behind Yokohama considering how good they are on the counter-attack and having to chase the game yourself.
And absolutely. And Stuart, two of your mainstays up front from last year, Elber and Nishimura, basically just picking up where they left off. And Nishimura obviously showing no signs of slowing down. It's clear that his breakout season last year wasn't a flash in the pan. That was a lovely controlled volley past Jung, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was for me, that was just a beautiful goal. Like looking at it on the TV coverage. Then I was just so happy that he'd got that goal, because as you mentioned, like he's better and better as time goes on. He was good from the start, but also Elba has been really good and started the year very well. I went to the training ground, which is like quite close to my house now, and Elba is just so fast and he just like runs like a train, like in training. And I never really noticed him, like that on the pitch. But he's just in such good condition, and he looks really, really good. One of the best players there now. So really happy he had a part in it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Sam, what did you think of Frontale's response to going a goal down? From about the 20th minute on, there were a couple of chances that Daiya Tonno and Taisei Miyashiro would love to have back. I mean, Miyashiro's unlucky that his ball's curled on to the outside of the post. But in the 19th minute, Tonno was on the end of a lovely move, a back-to-front passing move, and was sent through down the centre, only to shoot too close to Obi Pal or Binna. So, they did create a couple of chances, Frontale, and they looked to work their way back into the game.
Yeah, because the first 20 minutes was a nightmare for them, because obviously Marinos has got the early goal and then their tails were up. They were pressing relentlessly and Kawasaki just couldn't get any sort of passes together. They kept losing possession. They hadn't they've got no control over the game. But thankfully for them, Marinos kind of tied a little bit, or at least took their foot off the pressing gas for a little while, and then it allowed Kawasaki to get a little bit of control. And then they were able to play these through balls inside the kind of inside left channel for them. Marcinho mainly running onto it, but Tono also for the one you mentioned. There was a bit of a gap between Matsubara and Hatanaka on that side, which they kind of dealt with, they utilised, sorry, and Miyashiro dropping in from centre forward. He came very deep on a number of occasions, and often that would bring Hatanaka out of position. It left that gap in behind him, and yeah, there were a number of occasions they got in there, and better finishing, a bit more composure, and they could have had one or two, maybe even more goals from that. So at least they found a way through, and that's got to be something Marinos have to work on. They can't be as open as they are when they go and they have to, when they have to take their foot off the gas with the pressing, because yeah, Kawasaki found the way through there, and it gave them confidence for the rest of the game.
Indeed. So, Stuart, we've had it confirmed that the goalkeeper, Yohei Takaoka, has joined Vancouver of Major League Soccer. And obviously his departure has opened the door for Obinna to take the number one shirt for F. Marinos. And I mentioned there his key save from Tono's effort in the 19th minute. So, overall, how satisfied were you with his performance? Obviously, as we're going to come on to soon, he was beaten right at the death. But, for the most part, he looked, fairly at home in the number one shirt. And, looks like this could be potentially a breakout season for him. I'm sure you're hoping that it will be.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with him. Like, I'm not a big naysayer about Obi. I liked him when he was in goal before, and I think he did quite well in those the matches before Takaoka came, and even on the first match that Takaoka came at Kawasaki, he got sent off quite early for a tackle outside the box. So Obi was in for the rest of that match, but then in the last season didn't play at all. But he's such an enthusiastic bench member too, that running off the bench, picking up the ball, giving it to the players, greeting the players, he's just so happy to be there last year, even though he didn't play a minute. But in terms of things, I think he's going to be the main goalkeeper this year. I don't think Ikura will take it off him, and I think Ikura will be there as the backup, and I think he's happy to be back at Marinos. I think maybe he would have been at Marinos anyway as a coach, if not this year, but in the near future. There seem to be a lot of players coming back now, joining the coaching team, joining the academy coaching and things like that. And the goalkeeping team at Marinos is headed up by Shige-san, who was the previous long time ago Marinos keeper and national team keeper, and he's getting old now, so I think he will be retiring in a few years, I will guess. So but he has, I would say, the choice. He's the one who decides who's going to be the goalkeeper, like, and adapted that to, you know, Postecoglou's way of playing out. So I thought there may be some disagreements, but no, he's in firm control of that. So he's obviously selected Obi for now, and we'll see in the next few matches whether he will continue. But I was really, really happy that Marinos got off to this start. I was hoping for a clean sheet, but got off to a good start, because we haven't got off a good start for so many years. Like looking back almost to like 2018, as far as I can see, like either a draw or a loss. And it's almost the third match we have a win in most seasons.
Yeah, well, yeah, you've definitely got off to a flyer this season. And yeah, Obi, as I said, did look impressive between the sticks last Friday night. So, I guess F. Marinos weathered that brief frontale storm of a couple of good chances. And then 7 minutes before the break, the visitors went 2-0 up. Anderson Lopez heading down a Katsuya Nagato corner. And yeah, that man, El Burr, leaping to hook home a volley from inside the 6-yard box. So, Sam, that was 2-0 to the visitors at halftime. And I don't think you could have too many arguments, or frontale supporters could argue too much, that it wasn't a deserved lead. And but Frontale almost hit straight back just seconds after the restart when Marcinho drove just wide after Asahi Sasaki's blast was blocked.
Yeah, it was a good start to the second half. They had to have a reaction, obviously, conceding late in the first half. And yeah, just Marcinho, he had so many opportunities in this game, whether it's the eventual shot on target or getting into really good positions, 1v1 versus either Matsubara or Sonoda, who came across later in the game. And it just wasn't happening for him. He couldn't hit the target when needed. He couldn't get his effort away. So this was another, yeah, big chance that went by. And then a little bit later, there was a free header for Diotono that, he headed wide. So it was just at that stage, it looked like it just wasn't going to be Frontale's day. They weren't going to score. It wasn't going to happen for them because they kept creating chances. And I think Marinos allowed them a little bit too much space. I think this is the best bit about this result for Marinos, is I don't think Marinos played that well, but came away with a 2-1 victory. So, fantastic for them. I think they'd absolutely take that. Kawasaki just, they've got issues, haven't they? They've got issues in scoring goals quite clearly in this game. And then defensively, it didn't take a great deal for Marinos to score against them. And we've said about the lack of defenders that they have. I think just after this, Kurumaya goes off injured. We'll get onto the red card for JCL. Naborizat has already got his first of about 3 or 4 injuries this season. So they are already down to the bare bones after one game. And that is an atrocious position to be in.
Well, yeah, and we mentioned, yeah, Tornal had two terrific chances that he spurned. The second was from a Yusuke Sagawa cross, and I mean, yeah, it's after match day one, so I know this is overreaction theatre, but I don't, want to write players off or anything like that. But I'm just wondering, Sam, if guys like Tornal and Sagawa, I mean, it's an obvious thing to say, but they're just not at the level of the players that Frontale have lost in recent seasons, are they? And I mean, they're almost irreplaceable, some of them. So, when you see Sagawa come off the bench, it's not, I don't think it's a move from Toru Aniki that's going to strike fear necessarily into an opponent. He was, a couple of decent balls into the box, but he also gave the ball away on several occasions as well, Sagawa. I don't think it was a particularly standout debut for him in Frontale colours.
No, it wasn't. And Yusuke Sagawa, a player who was okay at Shonan last year, but you wouldn't look at a Shonan game last season and think, wow, how great is he? He has to be playing at a higher level. So, it's the players that they've lost over the years, though. They're some of the best players that I've seen in Japan at all in the last 8 years. So for them to try and replace them, it's just, they haven't really gone about it very well. Most of the money they brought in went on Chanatip, who has just been injured forever, and they don't play with this position. They don't play with a number 10. So they've wasted any funds that have come in. They haven't really... I think Marcinho is probably the one good player that's come in and really sort of replaced him, but he's still coming in after Mitoma, which is like the best player that they've had. So, yeah, it does look clearly weak a squad on paper. As we were saying throughout pre-season, they have not really addressed anything in terms of that. There are still very good players there. If you look at the midfield, I thought was still very good. I thought Tachi Banada was arguably the best player on the pitch, the way that he pressed and then he would go forward when Yamane came into midfield, as he did a few times. I thought so there's still very good players in that squad, but yeah, the more players that they lose, the more gaps there are, and they've not really made any attempt to fill those gaps.
Indeed. So yeah, 2-0 to F Marinos right up until the death. And Stuart, I'm sure you were expecting it was going to be 3 when in the 84th minute an F Marinos free kick was taken quickly in the centre circle, and Marcos Junior was sent through down the middle. Jeziel sliding in and clipping the F Marinos substitute, the referee initially awarding a penalty and a yellow card. And I mean, you were in the away end, so you will not have been able to see, I mean, in terms of perspective in that ground, I'm sure, the whether or not the infringement was inside or outside the box. But yeah, after a lengthy VAR delay, the decision was changed to a free kick on the edge of the box and a straight red for the defender in the 87th minute. But yeah, it was certainly an eventful ending to the game. And as Sam's mentioned, it does leave Frontale in a very tight spot, losing Kurumaya to injury and now Jeziel to suspension. But you were expecting Marcos to stand over a penalty and slot it home to make it 3-0. But yes, I guess reality struck once VAR intervened.
Yes, I didn't really understand it, what had gone on, until I watched it back on the TV, and I've watched it back like many times. So it's just so it's such an interesting way to go. But that recovery from the free kick and the ball straight up to Marcos, so that was brilliant. That was really, really fantastic. And I think Marcos had a fair chance of having a good shot on that one if he hadn't been brought down. And then inevitably we get the wait, and it looked like it was going to be the penalty. And so we really weren't expecting what was going to happen. And then when something stirs and it's the ball is kind of taken away and it's not going to be a penalty, then you think, oh no, like, was it a dive or something like that? And but watching on the TV coverage with Jesse, was laughing at the yellow card getting cancelled and then a red card just suddenly come out. I think probably a penalty would have been fairer to Kawasaki at that point, because they would have had a chance to save it too, and they wouldn't have lost a man. But the free kick wasn't very nothing came of it for us anyway, so I feel a little bit that we could have got a goal out of that. But it was just a fun, like, in the end it was a fun incident. But I think that kind of, like, when something like that happens, it disturbs the flow. It disturbs the flow a bit. So I wasn't really surprised it was going to be a goal after that. And I said to my friend, like, it's like, okay, Kawasaki always score in the last minute. And he said, like, don't jinx it, don't jinx it. And always score in the last minute.
Nostradamus over here. Yes, you're absolutely, absolutely spot on. Sam, what was your verdict on the penalty / free kick outside the box? And yes, the yellow card changing to a red.
Yeah, eventually it was the correct decision. I think I was with Stuart. I think Kawasaki would have might preferred, just to give the penalty and a yellow card, because they weren't going to win this game at that point anyway. So, yeah, they've been done in by the red cards and losing JCL for next week. Sorry, but yeah, once it's deemed that he was outside the area, which it was, then you can give the red card for denying the goal scoring opportunity. But if it was a penalty, you don't do the double jeopardy. That's been in for a few years, so you can't get a red card for it because it was an attempt at the ball. So, yeah, they've got it right. And on VAR decisions throughout this weekend, this was right up there with one of the best ones.
Yes, yes. All right. And yes, just as Stuart predicted, Frontale, down to 10 men by this point, did get a goal back in the first minute of second half stoppage time when Kento Tachibana ran on to an Asahi Sasaki cross and drove home past Obinna with a lovely controlled finish. But it was too little too late, and the visitors left with all 3 points and, the bragging rights in this particular rivalry for the time being. So, a Super Cup win the previous weekend, Stuart, also by 2-1. And then, you've won at your biggest rivals by the same scoreline in match day one. And, I think as Sam said, you probably haven't played too well in both of those games. But, you've banked a trophy and you banked 3 points. And, you move on to the next game, and indeed your home opener against Urawa coming up this Saturday. So that's sure to be a huge occasion as well, with a bumper crowd on hand at the Nissan Stadium, I'm sure.
Yep, really looking forward to that match. And but I don't think it's going to be easy match. As we said, that this Mariners were quite lucky in this match. A lot of, like, a ball, hit the post. There were quite a lot of shots. Obi made a great save. It's one of the lowest possessions for such a long time. 34% for Mariners. Every time they got the ball and passed it, intercepted. So many things can improve. Couldn't have been a better result. So I'm just waiting to see what happens next.
All right, terrific stuff. So thanks again for joining us, Stuart, on this episode. And thanks for your preview that yourself, Tony, and Pratik did last week as we wrapped up our previews of the new J1 season. It was great to hear from you then, as it is now. And we look forward to doing so again numerous times throughout the season.
Well, I hope we'll be back soon for some controversy or for some interesting talk. Yeah.
Absolutely. Never a dull moment with the F Marinos and indeed in the J League. So speaking of Urawa, Yokohama F Marinos' next opponents, they travel to FC Tokyo in match day one. And joining us after a quick hit of music to talk about that game is Alex Bishop. Next, it's our great pleasure to welcome a very familiar voice to J-Talk listeners, especially over the last week or so. Alex Bishop is back after contributing to our final couple of J1 previews. And then, of course, his blockbuster interview alongside Thomas Pennington with the FC Tokyo boss, Albert Pucci, last week. So, Alex, welcome back to the pod. And how are you?
Very well. Ben, it's it was a very good opening day. As a Tokyo fan, a great day out at the office. Excellent to finally take the 3 points over Reds. Doesn't happen often, so we relish it when we do.
Absolutely, yeah. 3 points in the bank in one of the crunch games that FC Tokyo supporters always look forward to on one hand, and I guess a little bit dread on the other. Or as I said last week, dread losing. But yeah, we came out on the right side of the equation on Saturday. So let's chat about it then. Two of the newcomers to the club started for Albert Pucci, Kei Koizumi and Teruhito Nakagawa. I guess they were both expected to start. So in general terms, how much did they contribute and how satisfied were you with their FC Tokyo debuts?
I think very well, to be honest. Nakagawa, he was unlucky not to score. I think it was in the second half. He had a shot come off the bar. I think Kashif played him in and he just smashed it at the goal. It looked like it might have, if Nishikawa was it, he might have got a hand to it. But no, it came off the bar. Unlucky not to go in. So he was very bright, very energetic, all over the place. I think he won a few fouls for us as well. Koizumi, he was in the center of midfield as a number eight. So me, I took my usual seat behind the goal. So I'm not sure like how much of a good view I actually had of how the midfield worked. Maybe Sam can add a little bit more insight on that. But we played the ball, played through the lines very, very well. And it was a very, very positive performance. And the two newcomers surely had their part to play too.
Yeah, yep. I'll take Koizumi then. I thought during the first half he was playing that eight, as you said. And I think he got a little bit lost in there. I don't think it's necessarily the regular position he played in, but second half I thought Tokyo in general flipped a switch, and I think a fair bit of that was Koizumi dropping into Higashi's position in front of the back four, and that allowed Abe to come on and Matsuki, and they had so much freedom. So it was kind of just him being there and being like that more comfortable. They were more comfortable with him in front of the defence. I think that allowed Tokyo to express themselves more, and Koizumi, still very good with his passing as well. So I think I know that he started Higashi, but I think this was a clear sign that Koizumi in that position was much better for FC Tokyo going forward. So I hope that is taken on board and carried on, because second half I thought Tokyo looked really good side.
Yeah, the preseason, predicted lineups, Alex said, Keigo Higashi starting in the deepest position in the midfield for FC Tokyo. And I think you and I are definitely on board with, we'd like to see him phased out sooner rather than later, as in, about 3 or 4 years ago. But, as it was, Albert started him. And I guess there might have been a bit nervy for you in the ground once Higashi went into the referee's book very, very early doors. And you're probably a relief that he was hooked at halftime. And as you both said, Koizumi was able to move back into probably his best position. And that allowed Shuto Abe to come on and play a huge part in the opener in the 66th minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think I was just watching the highlights then, and he went into the book around 10 minutes, right? But it wasn't really kind of a nasty challenge, just a bit rash. And then about 5 minutes later, he nearly went in again for a high boot going in. That the referee had to have some stern words with him. I think if that was the, if he wasn't already on a yellow, that would probably be a yellow. So the ref was a little bit lenient. Higashi may be lucky to stay on the pitch there. And that's probably, the key reason why Albert hooked him at halftime. A little bit of an essence that, as Sam said, in the second half, we really flicked the switch. There's always a chance that you're going to get caught on the break, right? So you might need your number six to pull down an attacker on the halfway line, right? So you can't have somebody already on a yellow card. So, the substitution made sense and was definitely for the better. And as for Koizumi starting in that role, I think it's long overdue that we have, a real solid ball-playing number six and not just, a veteran talent who kind of knows the team well, that kind of thing. I think we need a little bit more technique than that.
Absolutely. So two sides to every coin, Sam. And Alex and I are obviously very happy that Tokyo have run out 2-0 winners on the opening day. What about Urawa then? Their supporters will have left very frustrated, especially, I guess, at the manner, the two goals that were conceded, both via significant deflections, so that Tokyo could, you know, certainly count their lucky stars that both of those goals went in. I think, yeah, overall, Reds probably shaded the first half, but did they ever seriously threaten Jakub Slovic's goal?
No, not really. That was maybe a free kick that went over the bar, but no real attempts on goal of note anyway. They had a reasonable amount of possession. They were reasonably in control of the game in that first half without ever looking too threatening. They were playing this kind of high press with their that Scorcher has brought in, and it worked, I thought, for the first half. It allowed them to maintain that control, but it was quite clear to see that they hadn't been used to doing this, and they didn't really last. And as well as Tokyo getting better in the second half, Reds kind of ran out of steam as well. So there were certain positives in terms of the control in that first half, but yeah, really I wanted to see a bit more in terms of a little bit more creativity in and around the area, because relatively speaking, Tokyo were quite comfortable just to sit in a little bit more in that first half and defend fairly comfortably. Yeah, there was just not enough movement, I don't think. They're still maybe lacking that real out-and-out striker. I know Linson was up there. He's primarily been a winger at Feyenoord before moving for maybe one season there, but I don't think his movement was compared to, say, Matsuo of last season or other strikers. And I know they're looking at, I think there's a Guinean striker that's been looked at from, he's playing, I think it's Jose Kante, who's playing currently in China, and maybe he could give a little bit more movement, or Takahashi if he was in the squad, but he missed out this week. So, yeah, there are things to work on for Reds. It wasn't completely horrible, but I just think, yeah, they kind of tired in the second half and weren't able, when they were on top, to really create too much.
All right then. So yeah, to the two goals then, Alex. The first one, as I mentioned briefly before, came in the 66th minute when Kashif Gunagunde slipped in Shuto Abe. He sent his man for the paper as he cut back onto his right foot. I guess he was trying to pick out Kei Koizumi in the box, but via a deflection, the ball bounced in off Yoshio Koizumi and past a stranded Shusaku Nishikawa for an own goal. Nishikawa certainly flung himself out to try and pour the ball away, but was unable to reach it. So, a slice of luck. But as you've both said, Tokyo more dynamic once the second half got going. And I don't think we were necessarily banging down the door, were we? But, Abe certainly brought a freshness to the midfield after he came on.
Absolutely, yeah. I think both the substitutes, of course, had a bit of an impact. Abe and Watanabe, who went on to get awarded the goal. You're always going to need a little bit of an element of luck, right? And I think on the day we kind of created our own luck. I'm sure most analysts will agree that, you know, if you create enough chances, there's going to be enough things that happen. And yeah, I mean, the goal wasn't exactly a well-worked, beautiful goal, but it was probably deserved given the performance and the creativity that we had. I'll take it. But yeah, for sure. I mean, Shuto Abe, I think it was all his work, really, taking on the player and then trying to swing in the cross, and then he got the deflection. So, you know, the job's a good one.
Absolutely, and plenty of good fortune in Tokyo's second as well. That was scored by Ryoma Watanabe in the 74th minute. Diego Oliveira did superbly to hold the ball up and feed the wide man, who's a shot deflected off Hiroki Sakai and went in at Nishikawa's near post. The keeper, again, wrong-footed and left with no chance to react. So, unfortunately for you, Sam, it looks like this has gone down as an own goal in J-League fantasy. This one was awarded to Watanabe by the J-League, and I think most of the other outlets I've checked as well. But, according to J-League fantasy, it's an own goal for Sakai, and it's cost you 2 points.
Yeah, shocking. There's no such thing as own goals in Japan. That doesn't count. So I'm not happy with that. If I lose this season by 2 points, which isn't going to happen, then I'll have a complaint. But yeah, I think in J-League terms, this is as routine a goal as you'll see for Watanabe. It was unfortunate for Reds, and they'll point to the two goals being unfortunate in the way that they've come about as to a real reason why they've lost this game, which in a degree is fair. But I just thought Tokyo, the way that the dynamism between all the attackers, with Diego Oliveira as the main guy at number nine, but everyone else was able to move freely across the pitch. Like Watanabe here was left wing, with Adelton more central. You had the runs from Matsuki and Abe in behind the striker. Nakagawa likewise was switching wings, and it was just so difficult for Reds to deal with, and I think that's the main reason why Tokyo created the many chances in that second half. And yeah, if you create enough chances, you're going to get a bit of luck, and that's what they got. And yeah, it's great for Tokyo, because you don't usually, as I think Alex said earlier, you don't usually get that luck against Urawa.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And yeah, in your chat with Albert, Alex, it was really interesting to hear him talk about having to change the culture of the club, having when he came in at the start of 2022, and he spoke about bringing in a player like Nakagawa, who has that championship mentality, and that's really rubbed off on some of the other players in the preseason. I guess you can't help but be impressed by a player who appears to be as driven as Nakagawa is, and all we can do as Tokyo fans is hope that that sort of effect can last well into the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, when I heard about Nakagawa, I was, after speaking with Albert last season for the short chat we did then, and understanding his focus on mentality and improving the mentality of the club as priority, I thought that might be the very reason why he's gone for Nakagawa, given the titles he's won at Marino. So not just that, he was under Ange Postecoglou's regime, right? So that was definitely always going to be a player that would tick many boxes for Albert. So yeah, we can hope that that's going to rub off, and we are seeing signs of this even towards the end of last season. The players, they're now looking a lot more confident. Sam spoke a little bit earlier about the first half when Reds were playing this mad pressing game, right, and Tokyo were able to kind of pass their way out of it quite easily, were quite composed. In the past under Hasegawa, that probably we'd have probably crumbled there. We'd have been given away the ball in pretty dangerous positions. The players would have been forced to go long. They wouldn't really have had much of an idea how to do that. But now, yeah, it seems very, very different, a very, very, very different team at the moment.
Just, you've seen obviously Tokyo play there, and did you watch the Kawasaki Yokohama game on Friday night, Alex?
I did catch a bit of it, yeah.
So looking at that, and those two, the top two from last season, and then looking at Tokyo's performance, does that give you more confidence as a Tokyo supporter that a title challenge is on here and those two teams are beatable? Or did you see something in that first game and thought, okay, they're still a step ahead?
No, I think it's wide open this season, my honest opinion. And it, not just that game, but all the other games as well on Saturday. I don't think there was really a standout game, right? There wasn't a performance that really wowed you this weekend. I think it was, there's a few good ones. And I'd say that ours, could very well be the top or the closest to a real standout performance. But I think this year it's going to be, I really do struggle to kind of make a prediction as to who's gonna run away with it. I have an idea of what the top five or six might look like. But yeah, for sure, seeing Tokyo play that well against Reds, and we know what quality the Reds do have in the side, although it's not quite fallen together yet. It is a team with some very, very good players, and seeing us go out and really take the game to them and win as well as we did, we should be confident for sure that we could be well in the mix. I'll be quite humble, and I'm not sure that's going to be taking the grand prize, but definitely the ACL spots, I would be hopeful that we'll be in and around them for sure.
Yeah, good answer, mate. Good answer. All right. And speaking of predictions and that, did you sneak out a JPred when I wasn't checking, Alex, or do you usually swerve that?
No, I thought that this the J League Fantasy kind of superseded it, so I forgot to get the JPred out this season. Not that it would have been any good. What I was thinking, I would have probably gone with Marinos again as the winner. I would have put us up there. I was, because I didn't quite tweet it, but I did have in my mind what I was thinking it would be. And it'd probably be Marinos, Frontale, maybe Grampus, and then us.
Fair enough. And mentioning J-League Fantasy, another a strong start to the season for you, picking up where you left off at the end of last year. Sam's already scrambling to try and catch up to you.
Well, let's see how long that's going to last. But it's been a good start. I think I'm second, right, with I think it was a goal from Taniguchi at Niigata, and then Chiba in defence as well. I think he got the second goal for them. So my two differentials coming in there. So let's see how we go. But I'm not sure how long that lead over Sam will last.
And it's you were saying in the green room, it's unlimited transfers before the game week two deadline. So yeah, hopefully some people that maybe were dragging their heels and hadn't signed up yet can give it a go and basically get a free wild card to put their team together from game week two onwards.
Yeah, I believe so. So if the admin guy, this Kurosawa guy, if he's got all of the back end of it all together, you can make unlimited transfers this week to kind of fix your team up. So if anyone is coming in late, it's not too late to join. If you want to register a team, you'll be able to. Well, we have a full game week's worth of matches to look on that we've just had this weekend. So you can see who's performed, who started, who hasn't. You'll have a much better idea to set up a good team for the season ahead.
All right, terrific stuff, Alex. So, just a quick hit on this episode to, get your thoughts on the opening day win for Tokyo and indeed their opponents, Red. So we look forward to catching up with you numerous times throughout the season. Thanks for your time on this episode.
Pleasure.
All right, thanks again to Alex. And let's crack on, Sam, with the rest of the match day one results. To begin our roundup, we'll head to Kyoto, where Kashima Antlers were the visitors for Sanga on Saturday afternoon. And, unfortunately for the home side, a very flat performance from them. And, Antlers returned back to Ibaraki with all 3 points after a comfortable 2-0 victory. Diego Pachuca produced a lovely volley from the edge of the box to open the scoring in the 8th minute. And new boy Kei Chinen doubled Antlers' advantage just past the half hour after Yuma Suzuki pounced on a poor touch from Sanga defender Shogo Asada and squared across the 6-yard box for Chinen to tap in. So as far as the opening day cruisers go, I mean, they don't come more comfortable than this, I think, for Antlers. Sam, is just what your old mate Daiki Iwamasa was looking for.
Oh, absolutely. And he celebrated that tap in like he'd won the Champions League or something, running down the touchline. Shades of Jose Mourinho. So he was delighted by this. But I think it's the exact game that Kashima needed, given how poorly they'd done at the end of last season and how poorly they'd been in pre-season. They needed someone to help them, and Kyoto definitely helped them. I think they were really, really poor. I think the first goal is not the greatest clearance away by Kawasaki, straight to Pituka. And the volley is well hit, but it goes kind of through Wakahara. I think he probably should do better. And then the second goal, it's really poor from Asada. Just they're casually playing it out around the back. He doesn't take a very good touch. Suzuki steals in, and then it's a tap in for Chinen. And really, Kyoto just didn't get going. And it wasn't like Kashima were playing incredibly well. I thought they were in control. I thought they played okay, but Kyoto were just lackluster defensively and offered very little going forward. Their front three was as it was kind of last year. Toyokawa, Yamasaki, Kimura played. None of them did anything really. They made some changes. Ichimi came on, was okay, but not great. Patrick didn't do anything. So we've talked about all their lack of goals. It seems to be they tried six attackers out in this game. They were all pretty useless. And if they're going to add defensive frailties to that, then they're in for a long season. But credit enough to Kashima. I think they took advantage of the chances. They were in control. I thought they generally looked okay. Not really troubled defensively, but there are going to be much bigger challenges for them to face throughout the season.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, from the highlights, I mean, the major talking points after the second goal by Chinen were, Yuma Suzuki getting booked for giving it to the Kyoto crowd. He doesn't mind being wound up, and he's happy to give it back to the supporters. But the referee decided to book him for it. And then I guess Wakahara somewhat atoning for his kind of meek effort at trying to save Pachuca's opener by denying Chinen a second with an outstretched leg, a remarkable save. And it could have been 3-0, and obviously even worse if that one had gone in. So that was an important save that Wakahara made. But as you said, it was just a toothless display from Sanga, and certainly not starting out this season as they did on their return to J1 last year. Of course, their famous 1-0 home win over Reds to announce themselves back on the top flight stage. So, you mentioned some of the newcomers for Kyoto failed to fire, Sam. We've mentioned that Chinen scored the second goal. So if you could talk about his display overall, and the other newcomers, Tomoya Fuji and Kaishu Sano was handed his Antlers debut as well. Well, of course, one of the prodigal sons in defence, Naomichi Wada, started at centre-back, though, of course, again, Shoji is still out injured.
Yeah, so I'll start with the most impressive for me was Kaishu Sano in midfield. I thought he was very, very composed in there. He's been the one who's played all the preseason games. He started every game, played left back as well. But yeah, he was the one holding midfield. It allows everyone to... I think it's one of the most important positions in any team is that holding midfielder. And I think he was very good in there, very good in terms of his build-up play. I think he covered all the areas very well. It was just a generally very impressive performance. I think Fuji did okay on the wing, not anything major. He got in behind a couple of times. I think it was his cross that brought about that Chinen chance for the save, but so he was a decent outlet on there, but I've seen him play a bit better. But yeah, a fine and steady performance for a debut. And Chinen worked pretty well with Suzuki. He's going to be that main man up front, and Suzuki's going to flit around him, and anyone could have scored the goal that he scored, but you have to be there to take it. So that was good. And then yeah, you, as you mentioned, the one save, so a reasonable enough performance, so I'm not going to get too carried away from it. I think you've got to take into perspective the Kyoto team that they were playing against as well were a very poor side. Like, I can't come in and say Namichi Ueda was great. I can't say he was terrible. He was very rarely tested. Everything he did was solid enough, but there are going to be attacks that are going to test him a lot more. So in general, I think they'll all be very happy with the way that they performed, and it was a solid display from Kashima. But yeah, it's just, I know we want to overreact to something, but this game didn't give me much to react to because Kyoto were just unfortunately so poor on the day.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so Antlers next will take on Kawasaki Frontale in their home opener this Saturday, while Kyoto visit Nagoya. And speaking of Grampus, we'll move on to them next. They also won away from home to kick off their new season. They traveled up to Mitsuzawa to face J1 new boys Yokohama FC. And, just like Antlers did with the Pachuca's early goal, Grampus got going even earlier than that. Their big-name new signing, Kasper Juncker, held off his man and volleyed in a corner from a yard or two out in just the fourth minute to give Grampus the lead. The Yokohama FC players felt the corner shouldn't have been given, as the referee judged that the keeper Keigo Nagai got a fingertip to Mateus's shot, much to Nagai's protestations. But then Nagai properly flapped at the set piece, and Juncker took full advantage. So yes, a fast start for the man who was so popular in so many J-League fantasy teams, Sam. Obviously somewhat a budget pick these days, Juncker, after not playing too much for Reds last year, and not troubling the scorers too much either. But at his price, he looks like an absolute bargain for pretty much everybody, I'm sure, this season. And he got off to the perfect start on Saturday.
Yeah, one of the things I got right in my fantasy football this week, which wasn't everything, but a good start for him. He was lively, he was on the end of things, he was linking up pretty well with Mateus when they had the opportunity to, and yeah, he reacted really well here. I think it was really poor goalkeeping, and I know we were talking in the preview for Yokohama FC that maybe there was the idea that Brodersen might drop out, and it was very weird to not see Brodersen in goal. Maybe he picked up an injury, but I'd seen him in training photos that I'd put out, so I don't know what's going on necessarily there, but I think it was fairly clear, at least from this passage of play, that Keigo Nagai is not necessarily the answer. And yeah, this was really poor goalkeeping from him, just to kind of flap at that corner. So it sent Nagoya on their way, and I thought they would then go on and dominate the game a little bit more, but they didn't really. I think it was a fairly weird performance from Nagoya. And like, when they got going and when they were able to link with the front three, they looked dangerous. As we'll go on, the Juncker had another goal or not, or whatever it might have been. But they really struggled to gain possession in midfield. They really struggled to have any sort of control over the game. And really that didn't allow them to then get that front three in place. So I think you've got to give some credit to Yokohama FC for that. But I think there's a lot of things that Nagoya need to work on. I think the quality is there if they could unleash it. But yeah, that midfield didn't really get on the ball enough to make the most of those front three.
Right, right. And yeah, as you say, yeah, Juncker, in inverted commas, scored a second in the 17th minute after he raced onto a ball over the top by Yuichi Maruyama and finished absolutely superbly past Nagai from the edge of the box. But yeah, only for VAR to disallow the goal for the narrowest of offsides. I don't know, Sam, did they get Lee Mason off the street to do the VAR for this game? Because that looked really, really harsh against Juncker.
He might well have done. He's not doing anything in England anymore, so maybe he's tried his hand in Japan. This was rubbish. Juncker, all of his body is onside. He's pointing with his... He's got his right arm outstretched to point to where he wants it. And they've taken the line from halfway down his arm, and then that's what he's being adjudged by. And I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And it was meant to have changed a couple of years ago. There was a Premier League one where Patrick Bamford for Leeds is doing exactly the same thing, and he got adjudged halfway down his arm, and they were meant to change that towards his shoulder. And if it was his shoulder, I think Juncker is onside here, but the position they drew the line, it rules him offside. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that can't be what a VAR is there for. It's meant to be for massive errors or clear and obvious errors, and so then if you're judging a striker offside by the top of his arm, I think is absolutely ridiculous. So really unfortunate, I thought, there for Juncker and for Nagoya, and a let off for Yokohama. And yeah, not my favourite, another not favourite decision from VAR this weekend.
Yeah, really, really hard one to take for Juncker and for Grampus. But as you say, it kept Yokohama FC in the game. Up the other end of the pitch, what did you think of Koki Ogawa's return to the top flight? From the highlights, there are a couple of scuffed efforts that I'm sure he would love to have back. Maybe he snatched it, a couple of shots that if he had a little bit more composure, he might have been able to properly test Mitch Langerak. But dragged a couple of shots that, as I say, he would love to have another go at. But then as Yokohama FC stayed in the game at 1-0 right up until the death, and Ogawa had a wonderful chance to snatch a point in second half stoppage time, only to head wastefully over. So hopefully he's able to put this game behind him and the missed opportunities. But how involved was he in general play, and what did you think of his performance overall?
Yeah, it was one I wasn't that impressed, to be honest. I think he snatched at pretty much everything that came his way. I think maybe you've got in the back of your mind that you're playing in J1, you're not going to get as many chances you have in J2, so you have to make the most of them, and that causes you to then really snatch at them. Because yeah, there was no composure. I expected a bit more of him, considering the goals that he scored last year, and there just wasn't that. There wasn't necessarily the confidence in his own abilities to go in and take that extra touch, or maybe just slow things down a little bit. I think he was rushed in everything that he was doing. Maybe that is because you're up against a very good back line in Nakatani, Maruyama and Fuji, who didn't give him the time on the ball that he maybe would have wanted. But yeah, it was maybe a little bit isolated as well up front, and on occasions nobody was necessarily getting in and around him too much. Everyone was a bit deeper than maybe they would have been again in J2, where they were allowed to go a little bit further forward. So yeah, it's one of those days for him. I'm sure there'll be better ones, but then I thought that about Lukian last year, when he put in a similar performance at the start of last season, and that didn't really go well. But I think they just need to get a little bit more support to him, and just to allow a little bit more space, because if you get players in and around him, then the defenders have to deal with those players as well. Then it frees up room for Ogawa. But yeah, it wasn't a great performance necessarily from him. But yeah, hopefully that at least he got the ball. At least he had the chances. That's the positive thing about it. And yeah, hopefully he just builds on it and is a bit better next week.
Okay then. So Grampa's very much still a work in progress as they try to gel this new look front three. And Yokohama FC, while failing to score, were definitely in this game right until the death. But ultimately Grampus left with the 3 points. So eagle-eared listeners will have noticed that Kyoto Yokohama FC were in both mine and Sam's JPred bottom threes. as they both were for Johnny as well, of course. And yes, the third occupant of our bottom three in our J-Pred was Fukuoka, and they also lost in match day one, and they also failed to score. Avispa were away from home. They traveled to Kobe in match day one in a game, Sam, that judging from the highlights, not a great deal happened in until Daiju Sasaki crossed from the right in the 70th minute, and Yoshinori Muto's attempted glancing header onwards deflected off a Fukuoka defender and found Jean Patrick, who was, of course, the man off the bench, the microwave Vinnie Johnson style to provide an instant offense off the bench for Cerezo Osaka last year. And, well, he showed once again that, yeah, that's what he's all about. As just 4 minutes after coming on, he controlled that loose ball on his thigh before driving home low past Masaaki Murakami from alongside the penalty spot. So, yeah, was this just another a drab Kobe game where they just dominate possession and go nowhere with it? Or am I selling this game a bit short until the 70th minute?
No, I think you're maybe bigging it up a bit more than it was, to be honest. It was not a good game. Abyssal were completely in control. They were the only team that looked like they were going to score. And just in front of goal, they weren't great. Osako dragging his shots away. Murakami made a couple of relatively comfortable savers, although there was one where he tried to bring Saito had a shot edge of the area and Murakami spilt it and almost got it into his own net. So, but it was all Vissel, and not too many great chances. Avispa defended pretty well with that back three. It's always going to be pretty solid, and that's kind of the way where they needed a spark, Vissel, to really open it up. And I say it was a sort of a spark. It dropped quite kindly to John Patrick, but then it was a very good touch out of his feet and finish. And yeah, that was all that was really needed, because Avispa, a bit like Kyoto and to an extent like Yokohama FC, were very limited going forward. They didn't create anything of note that I can think of. They just, yeah, it was just very lackluster and drab performance from Avispa. And yeah, I think me and you are looking pretty comfortable with our bottom threes at the moment, and Johnny must be regretting his decision.
Yes, Shonan in 16th, eh, Johnny? Well, yeah, a long way to go, of course, but yes, at the moment, yes, yeah, Sam and I have got it right, but we'll wait and see. Well, of course, sorry, Tosu are rock bottom, of course, but yes, the three teams we had in our bottom three are, yes, winless and goalless after match day one. And just a quick note, of course, Yosuke Idaguchi signed for Fukuoka in the latter stages of the off season, and he came on for his Avispa debut in the 77th minute. Yet another player wearing number 99, Sam. I think it's now an outbreak. It's definitely caught on. I think there's four or five teams now with a number 99. I'm not sure what your policy is on it, but yeah, fair play to them, I say.
Oh, no, I hate it. Absolutely hate it. I want 1 to 11 starting. I want up to 25 for the squad. 99 is ridiculous. He's not even a striker. Like, I understand the strikers all want to be number 9, but there's already a number 9, so I'll just take 99 because I'm twice the striker he is or whatever. But, yeah, this is nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
All right, well, we'll agree to disagree there, and maybe we should take a quick break before we wrap up the last three games. So, yeah, we'll sort this out in the green room, listeners, and we'll be back to chat about the three draws from match day one in just a moment. Yes, three games left to review, listeners, and they were all drawn. Both of the Osaka clubs had to settle for two draws after falling behind, then taking the lead, and then being pegged back. But I guess, Sam, that is where the similarities stop between these two games. We'll begin with Cerezo Osaka hosting Albirex Niigata, and Albirex announced themselves back in the top flight with Kaito Taniguchi's superb first-time strike, giving them a 22nd-minute lead. Taniguchi's rise has been meteoric, and on his J1 debut, scored an absolute stunner.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I thought Niigata in general were magnificent. I thought this was the best game of the weekend. I thought both teams really went for it. It was really open. There was a lot of quality, I thought, on both and both teams. And yeah, it was summed up by this Taniguchi goal. Lovely exchange of pass with Ryotaro Ito, who might have been my man of the match. Then out to Taniguchi, a perfect strike, great technique into the bottom corner. And yeah, it was what Niigata deserved. I thought they'd started really well. And yeah, so yeah, fantastic for him. Yeah, his rise has been magnificent, and hopefully he can continue that, because yeah, this is a perfect way to start your J1 career.
Yeah, absolutely. A superb opener. But host Cerezo almost hit back straight away with Seiya Maikuma's 30-yard rasper just clearing the bar. But they were only behind for 6 minutes. At new boy Jordi Crooks's cross from the right perfectly weighted for Hirotaka Tameda to power home a header for his first J1 goal in 7 years. Into the second half, and Cerezo's prodigal son Shinji Kagawa came off the bench in the 71st minute, and shortly after he played his part in his side taking the lead. He released Ryosuke Yamanaka down the left, and when his cross was only half cleared, Hiroaki Okuno arrived to strike first time from the edge of the D in the 75th minute. A bit of the Pachuca about Okuno's goal, also a lovely strike. The ball going in off Ryosuke Kojima's despairing dive, but just like Cerezo did after going behind in the first half, Niigata hit straight back. A veteran defender Kazuhiko Chiba rising to head a corner that Cerezo keeper Keisuke Shimizu got a firm hand to, but could only help into the side netting. So yeah, these two teams ended up playing a very evenly matched game, Sam, which will have surprised many casual observers, I think, as some even had Cerezo, I think, winning J1 in their J-Preds, and obviously Niigata as a promoted side back in the top flight for the first time in many years. But yes, both teams led in this game, but for a total of 11 minutes between them, I think it was. So yes, a very evenly matched game, and I think at the end of the day, we can probably agree that a draw was a fair result, and the teams can shake hands on that and move on to the next game.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very fair. I thought both teams were as good as each other. They both attacked really well. They both had quality. Both had decent goal. Well, I thought Kojima as well played very well in goal for Niigata, maybe made a couple of saves. Shimizu was okay as well in goal. It was maybe surprised that he started. I know Kim was injured, but Yang, the other Korean goalkeeper, you thought that's what he was brought in for. Thought Christmas would come early for him, the one time he can get to start, and he didn't play, so for whatever reason he was on the bench. But Shimizu made, I think, a couple of saves from Taniguchi as well. So it was a good end-to-end battle. I thought both teams looked really good. I imagine that Niigata, coming into the season, would catch a few teams by surprise and come in and really attack them. And that's what they did. I'm really happy that they didn't just think, oh, we're in J1 now, we're going to have to sit back a lot more and we have to play a bit more reserved. But they didn't. They played their natural game. They really went at Cerezo. And Cerezo, to their credit, dealt with that pretty well and were able to come back. So, yeah, I wouldn't say, looking at this, oh, Cerezo drawing with Niigata, that means they can't win the league. I don't think that at all. I think this was a difficult game for them to come into, first game of the season. So I give them credit. And I think Niigata played really well as well. So, again, I don't think they're going to be relegation fodder this season. I think, for at least for the start of this season, I think that if they continue to play in this manner, they'll get points, they'll get victories eventually against teams worse than Cerezo. So, yeah, in general, I think both teams can come away with this game, yeah, heads held high.
Yeah, very impressive return for Niigata. And, yes, Cerezo, well, yeah, they will have been expecting to win this at kickoff. Ultimately, a good hit out for them, and they move on to the next game. Unfortunately for the Niigata supporters, they still don't get to enjoy a J1 home game this weekend. They're away from home for the second straight week, which is also the case with Urawa. Obviously, Niigata's the situation might be weather influenced. That's certainly not the case for Reds, but yeah, Niigata traveled to Hiroshima this Sunday for their match day 2 fixture, and yes, that should be an interesting one as well. Another big test for Albirex, no doubt about that. All right, so yeah, Cerezo drew 2-2, as did their fellow Osaka club Gamba. Gamba traveled to Kashiwa Reysol, and well, I guess we've mentioned a couple of surprise selections so far, Sam. You know, Sven Brodersen not being between the sticks for Yokohama FC, etc., etc., and indeed the Niigata goalkeeper decision might have surprised some. But yeah, for me, the first big surprise of the J1 season came at the Gumba selection table, where new manager Danny Poyatos plumped for Kosei Tani as his starting goalkeeper, seemingly ending Masaaki Higashiguchi's 9-year reign as Gumba's number one. I mean, yeah, obviously Tani is a terrific goalkeeper in his own right. And yeah, in many respects, he couldn't go wrong, Poyatos, but he did have to make a choice. I'm sure he spent a lot of time deliberating over it. But yeah, ultimately, Tani got the call. And I guess we can assume that it's his job from this point forward.
Yeah, I would think so. And I'm delighted by the decision, to be honest. There's nothing against Higashiguchi. But yeah, when we previewed Gamba, I thought Tani should have been the one. You've got a 22-year-old goalkeeper who has played the last few years, starting every game. He has to come in. Otherwise, what's the point of him being in the squad? So as great as Higashiguchi has been, and he has been, and it's really harsh on him to lose his place. But I think Tani is the way forward. And I think he played very well as well. Yes, he conceded 2 goals, but I think his general goalkeeping was very good. I think it was a save from Hostoya for the first 10 minutes. He did really well at and made a couple of others throughout the game and generally looked quite comfortable. I don't think there's much he could have done personally about the 2 goals that Gamba conceded. So, yeah, really bold decision. I like the decision. And, yeah, well done, Danny Poyatos. And I think that might be the first compliment I've ever paid him.
Yes, indeed. All right. So as you mentioned, yeah, Tani was out to racing out of his goal to thwart Hosoya in just the 10th minute, while up the other end, Masato Sasaki, more on him later, made a reflex save to keep out Darwan's bullet header from a corner 10 minutes before the break. Yes, we'll definitely be hearing more about those two players shortly. But yeah, Tani was beaten 3 minutes before halftime. Hosoya's cross poorly dealt with, and a new Raysault signing Eiichi Katayama running onto the loose ball and driving home low to the keeper's right. But then Gumba turned the game on its head with 2 goals in 5 minutes early in the second half. A first new captain, Takashi Usami, took a pass from Darwan. He shrugged off Mateus Savio and eased past a poor lunge from Yugo Tatsuta to squirm a shot under Sasaki that just crept over the line. And that was in the 49th minute. Then Darwan's shot from 25 yards completely bamboozled Sasaki as, it bounced right in front of him. Surely one of the easier catches a professional goalkeeper would make 100 times out of 100. But, yeah, a terrible error from Sasaki as Raysault, well, they look set to be the architects of their own demise, Sam. It was, Osami's made a determined run, but, yeah, Savio shrugged off too easily. And what's Tatsuta doing? And then, yeah, Sasaki's just, it's just horrendous for the second goal.
Well, Tatsuta was doing what he usually does and not defending very well. It was dreadful. I mean, you've got to put a proper tackle in there. He just dangled a leg out and thought, oh, that'll do. And it was very easy for Usami to get through and decent enough finish. Sasaki almost got enough of it, but not quite. And then in for the next goal, yeah, the cross comes in. Tatsuta is the one who makes a hash of his clearance, booting it at Suzuki. And then it comes out to Darwan. It's a decent enough effort, but it's so easy. It should be so easy for any goalkeeper worth their salt to save that. It's really poor from Sasaki. I have certain he's only 20. He was thrust into it last season when Kim Sung-yu went, but yeah, this is a really poor piece of goalkeeping from him. And just looking at that him in goal and the defense, especially Tatsuta in front of him, that is what is going to stop Kashua from being a reasonable challenger for an ACL position. Because going forward, and as they showed in this game, there's a lot of very good players there, but that Achilles heel is just going to be a bit too much, I think.
Yeah, perplexing stuff, but they kept going, Raysault, and Gumba's lead held until deep into second half stoppage time, when Hosoya just got goal side of Kwon Kyung-won and went to ground. The referee pointing to the spot. I mean, tired bodies at this stage of the game, no question, Sam. But yeah, Hosoya, one last burst to get ahead of Kwon, who was obviously out on his feet. And the only thing he could think to do was to haul Hosoya to the ground. Unfortunately for Gumba supporters, with the inevitable VAR check delaying things by a couple of minutes before Hosoya held his nerve to dink his penalty down the middle past Tani, who dove to his left to earn Raisel a point. So, frustration for Gumba to drop 2 points, obviously so late. But for Raisel, relief for them to snatch something when it looked like their defence and goalkeeper were going to cost them all 3 points.
Yeah, it did. I think relief, absolutely, for Cashew. I think going forward, I think they probably deserved a point from this. And yeah, they'd be delighted to have bailed out the defenders here. I think Hosoya generally had a very good game because we were wondering, well, what have you got for this season? But I think his overall play was really good. He was involved in the first goal. I think it's his cross that comes out to Katayama. He had really good movement, him and Muto, just that burst in behind. And yeah, it was a tired foul from Kwan, yeah, a clear decision. Don't know why it took as long as it did. And then great credit to Hosoya for having this calmly side footing in the 95th minute of a game to get an equaliser. So yeah, really good for him. And it's just Gamba always going to draw, weren't they? Because Dani Poyatos has this draw curse hanging over him, so we shouldn't really be surprised.
No, fair enough. Yeah, indeed. All right then, so to the final game of match day one. It's the only game that ended goalless, but people down in Hiroshima are still scratching their heads at that particular fact, because they did everything but bang the door down. Sanfrecce, when Sapporo visited on Saturday afternoon, again in inclement weather down at the Edion Stadium, and Hiroshima supporters can scream at their podcast player that they did indeed score a legitimate goal, Sam. And we could list off all of these chances, but the simple fact remains, and if anybody wants some proof, they can just check your tweet of your freeze frame, the picture when Takumu Kawamura powered a header on goal in the 74th minute that the Sapporo goalkeeper Takenori Sugino kicked out of the goal, with the replay showing that the ball clearly crossed the line, but VAR did not award Hiroshima the goal. So, scandalous. It goes without saying. And I mean, you said earlier, if you lose the fantasy by 2 points because of Hiroki Sakai's own goal, then you'll be fuming. Well, imagine how Michael Skipper's going to feel if Hiroshima lose the J1 by 2 points.
Oh, absolutely. This is a disgusting decision. When you've got the perfect angle for VAR right down the line, it's not like the Mitoma one in the World Cup where you couldn't really see correctly because of the angle of the camera. This is looking straight down the line of the post. All you have to do, and it doesn't need great technology, I just use my finger and the pause button on YouTube highlights, and then you can quite clearly see the ball is over the line. There is a clear gap between the ball and the line. It is a disgusting decision. I mean, just considering they take forever over every other decision, why aren't they just, they've got plenty of time to go and just look at that frame by frame. There is no doubt in my mind this was over the line, and this is a really atrocious decision. And considering this is one of the first games that they really broadcast in J1 out to the world, it went out on YouTube to so many countries, and to have it messed up by, this is showing the standard of refereeing and VAR in the country, that they can't even get a clear goal over the line correct. I mean, it was an absolutely embarrassing decision, and yeah, Hiroshima have every right to complain, because besides that, this was a 0-0 battering. They absolutely hammered Sapporo. So many chances. I mean, Kawamura must have had a sleepless night on Saturday. The amount of, he obviously had this one that went over the line, and Sugino would put in some sort of Superman performance to deny him on several occasions. So yeah, very, very frustrating for Hiroshima. But Takanori Sugino, what a performance from him.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that another interesting decision by a manager in terms of his goalkeeper selection. I guess most of us expected that Gu Sung-yun would come straight back into the team after returning to Consadole over this off-season. But I must admit that was just my thoughts, because he was the regular before he left. But I hadn't followed any of Sapporo's pre-season friendlies at all to know which way Petrovic was leaning. But yeah, I must admit to being surprised that Sugino got the nod. But to say he justified that selection, yeah, is an absolute understatement, because he just put on a remarkable display. The warning signs were up early for the Sapporo defense. Hayato Araki headed a Makoto Mitsuda corner against the post in the 17th minute. Then in the first half stoppage time, the same pair combined from another set piece, only for Araki to head too close to Sugino. Then just past the hour, it all kicked kicked off, and Sapporo, it looked inevitable that they were going to bend and finally break. Nassim Ben Khalifa side-footed wastefully over from just inside the penalty spot after a Kawamura cutback in the 63rd minute, and then, yes, a running battle between Kawamura and Sugino that, should have resulted in a goal. As we've said, the ball did appear to clearly cross the line. The first of them in the 67th minute when Kawamura drew a low near post save from Sugino, and then he tipped over Kawamura's diving header. I mean, Sam, you would have absolutely loved that if that had gone in. Kawamura, stooping to head down into the floor, but Sugino able to tip it over. Then, what is now history in the 74th minute, the goal that wasn't given. But, Sam, it was almost one of the great smash and grabs of all time, because in the 90th minute, Daiki Suga, who has obviously scored a number of terrific goals for Sapporo in the last few years, has scuffed his shot slightly across Keisuke Osako. If he had made better contact, I'm sure he would have finished up in the back of the net. But as it was, to Osako's relief and, all of the home support inside the Edion Stadium, the ball came back off the post, and Hiroshima, they might have ended up with nothing, but they had to settle for a point in a game they absolutely dominated. As you say, Kawamura will just be having nightmares about the fact that he didn't score or wasn't awarded a goal from this game, because he'll just be having nightmares about Sugino, won't he?
Oh, absolutely. He'll just see it for the next week in his dreams. I'm so unfortunate for him. But what a performance, as I said, from Sugino. And, that chance for Suga right at the end. I mean, generally, not many people hit a cleaner ball than Suga. So for him to scuff that effort is slightly surprising. And, it would have been one of the biggest smash and grabs that you've ever seen in the league. And a real injustice. I think if Sapporo had come away with a victory there, they were so fortunate to get even a point. But, when you don't take your chances, which is kind of what Hiroshima did. Yes, the goalkeeper was in magnificent form, but a couple of them they could have done a bit better with. And obviously, I know they did score, but there's got to be something they have to work on. Obviously, you're not going to face a goalkeeper in as inspired form as Sugino every week. But it might be a slight concern that they haven't managed to score in this game, at least legitimately, or at least one that counted on the score sheet. But they're still going after out of this game. Once you've battered a team in the manner that Hiroshima did here, I don't think there'll be any great concerns. I think they'll believe if they play out that every week, they're going to win 9 times out of 10. So not the greatest result, but they'll take it and they'll be okay. And I think they'll still take some confidence from this. And Sapporo are just going to be delighted that they've managed to get away with this, because they don't get many 0-0 draws, and there's not really... I still have no idea how they got a 0-0 draw here.
Yeah, certainly not their forte, but they've escaped back up to Sapporo with a point, and they will open their home campaign by welcoming Kobe to the Dome this Saturday. So that's all of the 9 games from match day 1 rounded up then. So a quick look ahead to match day 2. Shonan were top billing on this podcast, and they are top billing in the match day 2 slate. They host Yokohama FC on Friday Night Football to kick off the round of games. We then have 6 games on Saturday and 2 on the Sunday. So we've broken out the this week in VAR drop, Sam. It would be rude if I didn't break out to Sam's pick of the weekend as well.
Sam's pick of the weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to, I think, this weekend. A really good slate of fixtures. But what I'm going to go for is Yokohama F. Marinos versus Urawa Reds. I didn't mention this in the entire podcast, but it was so great to have chanting back in this. You don't realise how much you missed it until it comes back. And it's been so long since I've been sat deliriously tired at the end of a shift singing do 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 Kashiwa. So I was delighted that was back. And the Marinos with a full house against Reds, that should be a fantastic atmosphere. Should be fantastic. Yeah, it's something that I'm really looking forward to. I think it should be a good game as well. Marinos obviously on a high. Reds need to sort themselves out a little bit. You don't want to lose your first 2 games, and they've got a difficult task against Marinos. But yeah, that should be a really exciting match. So that would be my pick. Is there anything for you that stands out?
Slightly biased. FC Tokyo returning to the scene of the crime last year, the 6-3 victory over Kashiwa towards the end of the season. I'm not expecting a repeat of that result, but it'll be interesting to see how Tokyo get on over at Hitachi Dai on a Sunday afternoon. Actually, I'll probably go for the other game on Sunday that kicks off at 2 o'clock. It's Hiroshima, who we've just talked about, hosting Niigata. Sanfrecce looking to get their first victory of the new season, in a season that many of us think they could go on to win the league. And Niigata, who were so impressive in their top flight return away at Cerezo on Saturday, see if they can head to another top four contender and put on an impressive display again. So yeah, that would be probably my overall pick. Surprised you didn't go for the Daiki Iwamasas hosting Kawasaki, Sam, but that's an interesting game, obviously, in its own right. And we'll see how those two teams get on, and if Frontale can notch their first victory of the season. But promises to be yet another fascinating match day across 3 days. And we'll be back to wrap it all up in next week's episode. Wonder if Shonan will still be top of the pile after match day two.
Well, they've got a very good chance opening up on Friday Night Football. And it should be an interesting game as well, because it should be one that Yokohama have got to attack in a little bit more than maybe they did against Nagoya. So really looking forward to this weekend's fixtures. And I don't think I may have mentioned it in passing, but anyone outside of Japan wanting to watch J1 games, we actually have a chance this year. It's all on YouTube, and they're showing up to four games each weekend. They haven't exactly said which ones it's going to be this week, but I imagine the Friday Night Football will be one of those games shown. So try and catch as many as them. And if you can get a double bill of Marinos Reds and then Kashima versus Kawasaki, I think that's a fantastic morning or afternoon or wherever you may be in the world.
That's a good shout, and they are timed out perfectly. Absolutely, that's terrific stuff. And should be two fascinating games. All right then, so we'll leave it there. That's it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Stuart Woodward and Alex Bishop for guesting on this week's episode. We'd like to thank our newest patrons, Adrian, Claire and Brett, for coming on board the good ship J-Talk. If you'd like to get involved for as little as $1 a month, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. Thanks to all of our patrons, of course, for their ongoing support. And thanks to you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 2. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.